Combo Nation, we're here, man. We haven't done one of these intros in a while. Don't forget to rate, review, punch down on that subscribe button. Can they hear us now? Good. What is up, everyone? And welcome to episode 570 of Combo's Court. And you know who it is. I am Combo. You can follow me on Instagram at 12combo. That's O-N-E-T-W-O-C-O-M-B-O. Also, don't forget to rate, review, and punch down on that subscribe button wherever you listen to Combo's Court. Today's a recording from the Beat Ball Breakdown live show with Coach Nick and yours truly. We discuss LeBron James' defense, NBA officiating, Kyrie's game winner, and more. Just a fantastic conversation with Coach Nick. This episode is brought to you by Prize Picks for a first deposit match up to $100. Use code COMBO. That's right. Use code COMBO for a first deposit match up to $100 on Prize Picks. Using code COMBO is also a great way to support Combo's Court. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy. Shouts to everyone who tunes into the B-Ball Breakdown live shows with Coach Nick and yours truly. And without further ado, let's get into it.
Fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown live show coming at you on a Monday morning, as always, joined by Combo. And we're going to talk about the NBA. We're talking about the Kyrie shot. We're going to talk about the Luka shot before that. And this is the crazy Denver game. But Combo, what's going on, my man?
A lot of great things to talk about in the NBA. I mean, I feel like so much of the year people complain about this and that. I mean, we're going to get to the reffing. You know, people have been complaining about that. But I truly do think it's a great time for the NBA right now. Like, just so much going on.
I would like to think that. I also think that we're in the doldrums of the March, you know, everyone's kind of waiting for the playoffs. So maybe interest is a little bit down. But this hopefully will get people shaken back into the swing of things. Yeah, a lot to talk about. You saw the Kyrie game winner, I'm assuming.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Little controversy. Maybe he stepped out of bounds.
I didn't see that.
I wonder if I could share that. Let me see if I can pop it up here because I was looking at it, and let's see, we can all sort of think, decide what we think about this here. But let me see.
Let's just forget about that though.
Well, no, I mean, listen, this is all like, I can't believe it. Oh, wait, is this it here? Where did it go? Hang on. Let me see if I can find it. Well, anyway, I can share this one because we could probably do it this way. So if I do this. And then if you're listening on the pod, you know, you always come over to YouTube. You can watch that kind of stuff going on there. But we have, I believe it's this. Can you see this?
Yeah. That's crazy. What is that? Somebody's phone?
Yeah. So here, this is the only angle you can get of this where, so that he's okay there, the left foot stepping to the sideline, but then this is the foot that gets really close. See that? I don't know. It's pretty close. And then I think I'm just going to quickly go do this to find it. Here, it's this one. It gets close. Let me know in the comments, guys, what you think about this and whether you think that this could have been, you know, how close we are to being an out of bounds, which would have deprived us of just an incredible, you know, video here. But here, there it is. Like, I don't know, man.
I don't
like,
think so. Actually, I think I see a space.
You don't see a space, do you?
I do.
Okay. In real time, I wouldn't call it. I mean, you got to be really sure that he was there. It's too close for comfort. He shouldn't have been that close, I suppose, is the answer. But either way, I don't think I've ever seen I know we've never seen an offhand. And I know that people want to say Kyrie is already a lefty. But the bottom line is if you spend your entire career as a right-handed shooter on your jump shots and anything outside of a layup or whatever, close to that shot basket, you are a righty. I don't give a crap what you want to say about what he does with his pencil when he's writing. He's a righty. He's shooting this with his left hand from about, you know, a high school three, 19-9, 20 feet, drifting, Luka all up in his face, and he nails it on purpose. You know, that was the intended shot. Have you ever seen a shot like that before?
No, absolutely ridiculous. I think the fair thing to say is he's ambidextrous, though, at this point, just from to work on his craft. It's interesting because I had a tweet actually earlier that day, and like the one way you could really tell if somebody works on their game,
yeah,
is if they could finish with both hands from different ranges off different feet. I mean, some players don't work on their game as much as others and are still like really good basketball players. But when you have that kind of finishing package, I mean, that's usually a craft that's been worked on. Like we see it with Jalen Brunson, but nobody does it to the degree like Kyrie Irving. And it just shows the work he puts into his craft. Obviously, there's a lot of God-given talent, but there's a lot of work on your craft if you're able to shoot either foot, either hand with range.
Absolutely. And, you know, listen, I don't think he's ever really practiced that shot. Like maybe he's screwed around with it a little bit, right? But yeah. Either way, when you have the kind of variability where you're working on things that are challenging and difficult and different, then your body can find solutions. And that's the whole point of what, you know, the right. game of basketball is like. And you'll be able to create something that you had never thought about before and find success. Heartbreaking loss for the Nuggets. They had that game under control for a while, and then the Mavericks kind of took control of it toward the end. Interesting point. I just want to make sure, like, there was with 42 seconds left or so, the Mavs inbound to Luka, who just quickly shoots the three that tied it, right? That was the game tying
shot. Yeah. And some would say there wasn't enough defense being played on that one.
Oh, no. They were down. So let me just get there real quick, because the point I wanted to make on that one is that when you're down as a team and you're under, you know, a minute to go, you need to go and get the best shot you can get as quickly as you can. You don't run the clock down. You got to get it because you need more possessions because you're losing. And there is a great example where Luka understood that, got like, you know, a good shot, a good look. They weren't really paying attention. I think they assumed he was going to dribble the ball a little bit, run some sort of play, and just pulled it in their face. Truly remarkable. Let me just make sure. Maybe they're down by two at that point. So when Luka hits that, oh, and by the way, we had Murray hitting a three just before that to go up by three. So what Luka did was down by three. He ties the game on that one, which is huge, and didn't waste any time. Because remember, if he had missed that shot, then they'd still have a lot of time to either get the offensive rebound, foul, get the ball back. You know, you need more possessions. If you run it down, then you don't have more possessions, and you lose, the clock runs out before you can get back into the game. So just a great back and forth game.
Yeah, Luka's reaction was great, right? Like he fanned out pretty much. Like he couldn't believe it, what he just saw. And it's almost like he broke down and cried because it was just so crazy from his eyes. He loves those type of shots. I remember, you know, he did a collab with like Dude Perfect. Like he likes that kind of stuff. So it was just interesting to see his reaction from Kyrie's shot. But such an amazing shot. And I feel like Kyrie is almost so skilled that you're like not surprised. Like he'd be the guy that would get that shot and make it in. I mean, he's unbelievable.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was watching Luka is so dominant with the ball. I kind of wonder how Kyrie is handling this because he's got to play off of him so much. And I got to study some more of the footage to see how much they're lining up with Kyrie playing when Luka goes to the bench, because he's got to eat. He's got to have his opportunities.
I mean, he had this experience with LeBron, right? And then, like, he kind of wanted to do his own thing. At least that was the narrative. That's why he went to Boston. And then once he got to Boston, he was like, maybe, I don't know what he said, but he's like, maybe I shouldn't have leave. Like, I called up LeBron. You know, he was reminiscing on those moments, and he almost has it back at this point. Not saying Luka and LeBron are exactly the same, but they're, you know, bigger point guard type players. So, you know, things come full circle, and he knows how to play with a guy like that.
Oh, and absolutely. And functionally, they are the same. I would say Luka and LeBron at LeBron's prime played a very similar way where you had to play off of that. You know, is Luka a better passer than LeBron? That's an interesting question.
I think he makes the spectacular pass more often than LeBron.
Yeah.
I don't know if he makes the right play consecutively as well as LeBron, if that makes sense, but both absolutely great passers, like both phenomenal. I mean, Luka does some, like, for the highlights, I think Luka's better though.
Yeah. I just did the video. If you haven't seen it, go please check it out. Where Luka does the no look pass to such a degree where he can manipulate the defense with his eyes, literally Jedi mind trick kind of stuff. And LeBron doesn't do that. And, you know, I'm sure he probably could. And we've probably seen some no-look passes in my brain. I can't search for anything right now. But, you know, I'm sure he's done it. But Luka so consistently does it and so consistently gets the defense to be moving out of position because they assume he's going to throw it where he's looking. And then, boom, he hits the other pass. That is, next level stuff. In fact, he had a pass last night where he drove to the baseline on the right side, and then the guy on the corner helped off onto him, so he turned and blindly threw it over his head backwards to the guy in the corner who blew the, it was a, what, Derek Jones Jr. misses the three, unfortunately. But I made a point in my tweet saying it wasn't fancy to be fancy. That actually was probably like the best way to make that pass, because you want to be deceptive. You want to lure the defense in, and without having to like jump in the air and rotate and hang and whatever, it's easier to just take the ball and lift it over your head and just flip it behind you because you know it's wide open. So it's not to be fancy. He is doing this as a very strategic way to move the defense, get his teammates open. And he does it enough where I have to imagine it's fun to play with him and not as frustrating as maybe I was thinking in the beginning of this conversation, where Kyrie, you know, is upset about having to deal with heliocentricity of Luka. Luka moves the ball. He definitely will find you. And that keeps the teammates happy.
I mean, you say it's the right pass. Is he the only guy that could make that pass in the NBA?
Well, obviously we've seen Jokic make that pass. Other than that, who throws those kind of passes? Like, you know, who's the white chocolate now these days? I don't know.
Trae Young's a great passer.
Trae Young.
He's just a little bit smaller than those guys. I mean, Harden is a great passer. Not as quite, he doesn't have quite the creativity like a Luka, but a really great passer himself. Tyrese Halliburton, he's up there.
Absolutely. There are some guys, right. And we talked about this before, but like, I would love to be able to solve that riddle when you're coaching players at younger ages, how to create players that will do that. And I think we both sort of discovered or had said that there's some notion of personality. Like, that's your personality expressing itself. Mm-hmm. And you don't change people's personalities like that. So they're not going to just gravitate towards throwing those kind of passes. But I do feel like you can create environments at younger ages where they're not as scared to do that. And then you can maybe tap into that and find things that you wouldn't have normally thought that were
possible. I mean, you could work on passing, and I feel like probably the best ways would be in a game setting. But I do feel like it's also more of an innate skill than, let's say, shooting, especially spot up shooting. You know,
interesting. Really? So you think it's more of a skill than the shooting? It's
more of an innate skill. They're both skills. Yeah,
which kind of goes back to the personality thing, because you have to derive pleasure from doing that, and also avoid that dreaded feeling of making a mistake, where you have to be able to separate that notion of, oh my God, I can't possibly think about throwing this because what if it goes out of bounds? Luka doesn't think about that. He'll smile if he ever throws it out of bounds or whatever and realize, oh, okay, I'll adjust the next time. But some players might just get so nervous, scared, whatever, they won't even try it. You know, it's like what Curry, you know, with Curry, it's got to be a little bit maddening to coach him, because he'll do stuff that just makes you run and rip your hair out. But you realize that without that mindset, without that freedom that he plays with, he wouldn't be Steph Curry at all. And you have to give him that leeway, or else you're not going to get the amazing stuff.
Yeah. Another great passer, Steph Curry. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now I see some really great comments so far. We see Mehmet, thank you for, he's really excited that we're covering the Mavs and Luka. Thank you so much. By the way, if you want your question answered in this this show, the best way to do that is over on the YouTube side by Super Chats. It'll really help us keep the show going. We really appreciate it. We'll put the thing up on the screen. We'll give you a lot of love. So don't forget about that. But anything else about this game that stood out in your mind?
I mean, with that kind of finish, I mean, what else really matters? I think like the lob threats now that the Mavs have, right, especially with Lively and Gafford, I mean, that's really great for players to have at their disposal, like Kyrie and especially Luka, when you have those type of lob threats. And I think having those guys, you know, makes them so much more dangerous. I talked about how Lively would be a perfect fit even before he got drafted to Dallas. So I'm glad he ended up there. It's just the perfect place for him to play, and he's playing so well.
For sure. Now, the biggest problem that Mavericks have, like, they're winning in the last, let's say, the last 10 games. I'm just kind of curious. Their defensive rating is, terrible. Their defense is terrible. And I was hoping that Gafford would come in and, like, make some plays, which he has. He's blocked some shots. He's been active on that end. But it's a sieve. They can't keep the ball in front. They can't rotate properly. Like, whatever Jason Kidd is doing is not working. And it's going to kill them. And it's going to deprive us of probably anything more than a first round appearance in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to get past the first round. They can't stop people well enough. And it's really frustrating, only because it's slow rotations. They have enough, in my mind, enough of the personnel to be better than 25th in the last 10 games is what they are. You know what I mean? And that's, and even then, they're so good offensively that they're still 9-6 in the last 15 games, which is impressive considering how easy it is to score on them.
Yeah, I guess with the usage that the usage is not like evenly distributed. So it's, I mean, it's so tough to have that type of energy on the offense and defensive side, like, because Kyrie and especially Luka are doing so much. But I would say it feels like, I mean, maybe you could dig into the stats on that. It feels like Kyrie's really not holding the ball that much this year. Like, he's like making like really quick decisions.
Yeah, I mean, we can do time of possession if you want, or even usage. But let's just go back to defense for a second. Here's the thing about Luka is, and I get it. I don't want to blame him. You know, listen, he's the culprit in a lot of the defensive issues. There's no question. And they're going to roast him. If I was going against him, we would isolate. And that's what the Nuggets did. They went at him, and they would score easily. He doesn't want to foul. He's tired. I get it. But they need to probably shave a little of the usage rate down then, so that he needs to be a little bit better on two or three of those possessions. That's it. All I want is a couple more possessions. But it's also a leadership thing, because he is the leader of the team. He needs to be able to make some defensive plays, inspire the rest of the team, demonstrate the rest of the team like that he can also do it. That the game is not easy. This is a hard game to play. You have to be able to do that. And if he's not going to, you know, to be able to show his teammates that he can make some defensive plays, show some more effort, then they're not going to do it either, unfortunately. That's a big difference. And what was shocking about Nuggets is that, like, going down the stretch, they lost a game. And listen, they're going to lose games down the stretch because no team is undefeated in, you know, close games. But they are so good and ruthless with the way they execute. And then even when it's not working and it breaks down, you got Jamal Murray who can hit a three just out of nowhere. And then you got Jokic, who's probably the single greatest offensive weapon we have in the game today. You know, it's the Nuggets or the team that I don't see anybody beating four times in a week.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we've probably said this every episode, right?
I mean, as long as they're healthy, you know, and they don't need more than a 7 or 8 man rotation, which they have, with, you know, Brown, Reggie Jackson, gosh, who's that really good defender coming off the bench that I'm blanking now? God damn it.
For the Nuggets? You know,
what?
For the Nuggets?
Yeah. God, good athlete. God damn it. I'll tell you in a second. I was just looking at his name. I'm sure they're screaming at me right now in the thing. Peyton Watson. Thank you. Peyton Watson. Yeah. That's the 8 guys they need to play. That's it. And then in case there's some foul trouble, they can do a couple other guys and hopefully not get killed on those minutes. But again, I don't see anyone beating Denver. They're just so calm, collected. They know how to do it. It's ruthless in their efficiency and their execution. I don't know how you stop them. And then defensively, they've got enough with guys like Aaron Gordon. Jamal Murray is solid.
Jokic keeps improving as a defender too.
Yeah, and when he picks his moments too. That's the other thing. So he's not, you know, it's like, that's what I think Luka needs to do, is he needs to pick more moments where he can be an effective defender. And again, it's probably on the margins, just a couple possessions more a game, we would be able to start to change some things around, get him from, you know, 25th in defensive rating to, I don't know, 15th. And if they can do something like that, then I'd feel a bit better about maybe advancing the second round at least. But that's a real problem.
Tim Hardaway Jr. probably has to be a little bit better and a little bit more consistent to take, because he's probably their third best guard when it comes to offense. So he probably needs to take on a little bit more to give Luka a little bit of a rest, like not play so much of a heliocentric type style.
Yeah, I don't think he's the answer, because he's killing them. He's making mistakes that you just got to wonder, especially from his level of experience, it shouldn't be happening. Even it's like off target passes that aren't even turnovers. It's just like, torpedo the offense.
That's why he's the X factor, because he has the talent. He's just not as consistent as
I think at this point I might be like, okay, but you're right. That's a really good point. Okay. If you want to cut down a couple percentage points,
I
would just say, give it to Kyrie, like, you know, figure that out. Although we got to look exactly how that breaks out in terms of usage when they're both on the court. Cause I bet you Kyrie is doing some work as well, but I think that's the answer part of it.
And depth probably, right? I mean, do they even have like a great 8?
I don't know. Dallas? No. Well, I mean, you know, with Kleba, you know, he's got a lot of experience. And so now he's what, their 8th or 9th guy. You know, I kind of like that idea, but I'm not sure he's playing as well.
And then Lively, I mean, Lively has been really good, but he's like a rookie giving you minutes. Right. I mean, I guess Brown was like that with Denver. So, I mean, that worked out for them, but.
For sure. And by the way, like PJ Washington, I like how he's fit in as well.
Yeah, he's a good player.
He's looked good to some degree. Josh Green, you know, they have the pieces. They have guys who can fit in. So they just, it could be coaching. It might come down to like a coaching thing where a kid hasn't been able to figure this out that well enough. And that's on him. We have our first super chat though. Let's get to that real quick before we get too late in the long in the tooth for that one. Buzzer Beater. Thank you so much, Buzzer Beater. Great to see you. Please do a deep dive on the OG Barrett post trade. You know, I've been meaning to do, I was going to do a video right when it happened. And then I don't know, the footage it just wasn't grabbing me. Clearly though, OG has been a revelation for the Knicks.
You know what I mean? I think they're 15-2 with OG.
Yeah. And by the way, he's got like one arm at this point, right? That elbow, I think he's grabbing it, hurting him. He's, you know,
not I think he might have re-aggravated it, but his presence is just, you know, ridiculous on both sides of the floor. It even outweighs like what his stats show.
Right.
Like what he brings to that team, you know.
I mean, there's no more quintessential Tibbs player at this point in the league than OG.
On top of that, he's also like, if you like the analytics side of the game, he's great on that too, because he could shoot the corner three, doesn't shoot a lot of mid-range, could get to the basket even once in a while, attacking closeouts, and he guards. So like, he's a great Tibbs guy, but he's also great analytically, which they need, because Brunson and Randall do like to play that like grinded out basketball. So he fits so well next to those two.
For sure. Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because I was going through the last couple games where Brunson's been taking, you know, 35 shots a game. Because he has to without Randall.
Back-to-back 40s.
Yeah, and it's a lot of work. But, like, I don't think – is there a better mid-range pull-up player in the league right now?
KD.
I don't know. KD, you said?
KD, yeah.
Probably, but other than that, I mean, pound for pound, because he's smaller.
I'll say this. Outside of Jokic, he's the best post player and has the best floater game in basketball.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been saying that for sure. I mean, I'm not even sure. His floater game is good. I don't even know if I see him taking, like, a ton of those. I love the shiftiness, though, when he turns those drives into post-ups. Every guard needs to learn how to do that, because, you're not always going to be able to get all the way to the basket. You're going to get cut off. You're going to get into traffic. And what he can do on turnaround fadeaways, up and unders, all manner of clever footwork is really just fantastic. And so – just jittery, I suppose is the word, where he's explosive on those moves. It's just amazing to watch, especially for a guy. I mean, is he 6'1", maybe?
Yeah, he's probably around there. Who's better, him or Kyrie?
Oh, it's interesting. It's so different, because Kyrie is more like he'll get up in the air and hit like a double pump on the way down, high off the glass kind of stuff.
I think, I mean, Brunson, you could say, is having a better season, but I mean, Kyrie's the better player, I think.
That's an interesting, I mean, I don't know. I haven't really, they're so different in a way, right? Like in their approach and their body type and everything, that it's hard for me to like compare them, and like why you pick one over the other, 'cause it's so different. But I mean, I don't think
we got to answer the tough questions, Coach Nick. We got to answer the tough questions.
I know. Well, listen, Kyrie is probably the best finisher at speed on drives. Now the only problem is that we should look at the numbers right now. At some point when I felt that way, even a few years ago, like you look at his field goal percentage around the rim and it wasn't, you know, the top 10. And it was like frustrating, because you see it and you see he's making these amazing shots and the skill level is incredibly high. And we got to use field goal percentage, right?
Are you comparing him to like Rudy Gobert and like,
even if you isolate just guards or whatever. Okay, I mean, okay. Remember that was what it was like back in the day a little bit.
Yeah, somebody made like all these, what's the player? Probably tell me in the comment section. Somebody just made a whole bunch in a row and almost broke Wilt's record.
Yeah, that was on the
Mavericks.
From Washington. Yeah,
Gafford. That's good to see, because when Luka dropped 70, they were missing a whole bunch of bunnies. So shouts to Gafford for providing that.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you watch LA operate, Gafford is just one of his favorite targets out of the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. And what's nice about Gafford is he can give him, I pointed this out in the video, go watch the Luka video. He can short roll passes to Gafford early and let Gafford go. You can't really do that with Lively, right? Lively, you got to hold it longer, let him get closer, then you can lob it. But with Gafford, you can give it to him. He can put the ball on the ground and then finish strong. So it's a perfect fit for him. They just got to figure out how he can get better defensively, how Lively can get better defensively. There's just a lot of sort of confusion, it looks like. The ball goes in, and they're kind of like, nobody seems to have an idea of why. And they just need to be better at that. I kind of want to check real quick to see what under the Kidd era, like how his teams have been on the defensive end, because I don't know if they've ever been great. Let's see here. Advanced defensive rating. So like last year, the Mavericks were 21st, which is not good. The year before, the Mavericks were 25th. And let's go to 21-22, which I think was that Kidd's first year. They were 7th. That's interesting. I might have to look at that. And that might not be Kidd. Is that Kidd? 21-22? Let's look real quick. What is time? It might be. He was there. 21-22 was Kidd. That was Kidd's first year. So something about that 21-22 team. Let's see here. Who were the top minutes players? Luka. Oh, they had Dorian Finney-Smith, who's a good defender. Jalen Brunson, Tim Hardaway Jr. They had KP, who remember is another one of those guys that helps you defensively. So, you know, that's different.
Yeah.
And that explains a lot. So they need to figure that out. And again, what they did to do the, you know, with the PJ Washington and Gafford trades, you know, that does, that did address what they needed, but it's the schemes. It's the, they're not on the same page. They don't move together, and they got to fix that if they want to get past the first round. You know, although you can always argue that Luka can take over a series and win you a series, but I just don't know, you know, the first round maybe. Okay, let's get to some more super chats because they're coming in. Thank you so much. We got Joe. Oh, come back. Joe Starr, double, triple seven. Thank you so much, Joe. Luka, KD, LeBron, Steph, Kyrie, Booker. Are we looking at the best play-in tourney of all time? Ah, that's a great question.
Great question. How many play-in tournaments have there been?
How many what?
Play-in tournaments have there been?
Oh, I don't know. It's three?
Okay.
Four, three?
Yeah. I mean, if those are the guys in it, it'll be really fun. But, I mean, my question to Joe and you and everybody in the comments section, would we like to see these guys in a seven-game series more than, like,
yeah,
one or two
well,
games?
We will. We'll get two of them or two of those teams.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it does suck. Again, the Luka one in particular, because he's so exciting and so clutch, and then as, you know, Kyrie is too – I'm already frustrated that we might miss Luka deep into the playoffs. I really want to see a conference final with Luka going at Steph, you know, or
I mean, he made it to a conference final.
He did.
Yeah.
So I just want to see, you know, I just want to keep, you know, that would be nice to see at the end.
He killed the Suns and to make it to the conference final, right?
Yeah, right. When he tortured the Suns, that was
a God. He had their heart in his pocket. That was crazy.
You know, there's a real value to when you're smiling on the court. You know, smiling on the court could also be as devastating to a team as someone who's got smoke coming out of his ears and is really intense, because it just demoralizes you when you like you're almost like, you know, having a good time out there, just embarrassing people.
Yeah. No.
But yeah,
he really is. Oh, like I noticed that at the All-Star game, he really was just like smiling through it the whole time. He literally put 10% effort into the All-Star game.
It was embarrassing, and that's also the video I'm doing. Everyone watch it. I should get it done. I hope today about how the referees have changed the way they've called fouls.
So my Adam Silver said that there was no directive. Did you hear that?
They said there was no directive. Windhorse said on his pod that there was a video up in January about the referees' focus and what they wanted, how they wanted to adjust it. That would explain it. I went through it. It's not there, so I don't know exactly what he saw or what he interpreted. But they are looking at it, and somebody did something. So it doesn't matter whether they say they didn't or what they are parsing their words in a lawyerly way to make it seem like it. Somebody said something. The referees have radically changed a lot of how they call it. Now, that said, I am still seeing some of the calls that they're not making calls as well. So it's kind of back and forth. And I could see why players would get really frustrated because they're missing the consistency. But it is clear that the foul calls are down. Scoring is down from pre-All-Star game to All-Star game. We have not seen that kind of dichotomy before over an All-Star game break. So somebody said something. It's obvious. And now they're kind of backtracking to make it seem like, oh, well, we're looking at it and we're like doing the data. But no, there's without a question, somebody at some level, either it's the refereeing office, the development office of the referees, or the league to the referees, somebody, you know, got together and said, we have to basically play playoff rules, right? It looks more like a playoff game. And I think the fans are certainly going to enjoy that a lot more than what it was the first half of the season.
I mean, it's benefiting the Knicks, I'll tell you that. They're able to play with the physicality that they couldn't earlier in the season. So,
Yeah. That's been really now, the record for the Knicks isn't amazing, but again, without Randle, it's tough. They need Randle back. They need to get Brunson some rest, you know, or some support on that end as well. It's too hard. And I'm surprised he's not a puddle of sweat after each game with nothing left. It's amazing how he still has any energy.
Yeah, I mean, they tough Kings win, like, on the road, you know, playing on West Coast time. And
that was
a tough crowd. Yeah, that's a big win.
Yeah.
You know what else I noticed? I feel like every ref didn't get the memo, too, because we see some low-scoring games, and then we still see some, like, really high-scoring games.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think that the that's the inconsistency we're seeing, but I also – I mean, it's too powerful. The numbers are too convincing to me. But I have the footage. So that's the thing. So we've seen a couple guys do some Substacks about it, which are good in analysis. But, you know, I'm going to be able to show you the specific types of calls that they're eliminating, or they're not calling as much as much. So that's the point. That inconsistency could just mean we're going to not call all of them. Right. So the one, the real subtle push on the waist when the guy's on the almost about to jump, which is, you know, an old vet trick.
They were
letting that go. I'm sorry. They were calling that a lot in the first 50 games of the season. And I'm seeing more and more evidence that that's being let go. You don't just go from, you know, seeing those really clearly and knowing what the defender is doing and whistling that to then missing it and not seeing it at all. I don't believe that. I think that they're making this conscious decision to not call that kind of foul. And then all the ones that are on the one, when you quickly pull as the defender is about to make contact, you kind of get into your shot really quickly, which people seem to be really upset about. That one is also being not called as much, a little bit, but not as much. By the way, you know who the player who was penalized the most in terms of the most players that drive or the highest volume drivers in the league? You know who the player that's been penalized the most for not getting calls anymore?
Who?
Brunson. Huge drop off.
I mean, he had back-to-back 40s anyway.
I know. Let me look at the free throws because the fouls called that he was getting versus before All-Star game to after All-Star game it's just incredible how few he's gotten compared to what he got, you know, drives per foul.
So you're saying he would have got 50 in these games?
So, yeah, let me look real quick because I lost my Brunson. God darn it, I have my Brunson thing. Let me call it up again. Because
I think it is benefiting the team overall, even though it might not benefit him going to the line. You know,
okay. Yeah. Well, let's see here. I mean, he in the against Portland, which is kind of hard because Portland's just not good. He got 17 free throw attempts, but you know how much he got against Sacramento?
How much?
4. And then the game before that against Philly, it was a blowout though. He didn't play as many minutes. He only got 3 attempts and then 8. So you can see that there are a drop off in the free throws as well across the board after the.
It might be both teams because that Kings game was in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Now, the other thing is interesting is that, like, you know, AD and LeBron, for instance, like we saw the Lakers have always had this huge disparity in free throw attempts compared to their opponents after that Boston game a couple of years ago. That's gotten narrower too. But the thing is, AD and LeBron have maintained their free throw attempts. Those haven't gone down. They've gotten a couple less calls across the board as a team, but it's someone like Austin Reeves has suddenly just stopped getting calls on his drives that he was getting in the beginning of the year. So I had a take on it, or maybe it was only like the role players are going to quote unquote punish and not call for them. But I do see like Booker is another guy who's not getting as many calls on the drives as he was. So it's just all over the place as far as when you're looking at that. But Brunson by far was a guy who just wasn't getting. And I got lots of examples of that, even from yesterday's game where he does that quick pull and there is contact. And he flails and the ball goes flying and they don't give him the call.
You know, back to Joe Starr's question, I just had a thought. Like KD and Steph maybe playing against each other in the play-in, and it's looking more and more like that. Maybe they could capitalize on that one game and put it in a bigger arena.
Oh, well, I mean, they want to maintain their home court advantage, I suppose, but that would be interesting if they did that as a neutral site for the play-in games.
It's KD and LeBron. Like, I mean, you know, you could shift things last minute. I mean, they put out The Last Dance earlier, right, in the pandemic because they knew everybody was home. I mean, you could switch things up real quick if you think it benefits the league.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, let's look at the bottom of that, the Western Conference, because it's not just necessarily those four teams. Sacramento and the Mavericks are tied, and so are the Phoenix Suns for basically sixth, right? So any of those teams can move up. Now, the team in fifth, New Orleans, is six games behind. They got a 2.5-game lead with about what, 10 or 15 games left. That's makeup. You can catch somebody that you're, if you're two games behind. That's about it, though. I don't think you can make up about, you know, three games with less than 15 games left to go. That's a tough one to make up. So you might end up having Sacramento drop down and the Mavericks Suns move up, one of those two teams. And the Warriors and Lakers are both tied. They're in, and they're not going to drop down out of the 10th spot. And I don't think they're going to catch, you know, I think we have 9th and 10th locked in. So we have the Lakers and the Warriors. So that means they're not going to play each other, right? It's going to be, remind me how that goes. Do you remember 7-8?
I think 9th and 10th is,
one game.
Isn't that one game
for the 8th spot?
Yeah.
And then the 7th and 8th, no, it's not. 9th and 10th plays, then they get to play the loser of the 7th and 8th game.
Okay.
Right? So yeah, if you're in the 7th or 8th spot, you get two shots at it. And then please correct me if I'm wrong in the comments, but that's pretty much how it goes. So I think we're pretty much locked into the Warriors and Lakers in that play-in game. And, you know, if you like, we could talk about that game. We just had that preview, right? And it wasn't pretty. The Lakers defense, if we're ready to get into that, although we have some more super chats, let's get to those first. But I want to talk about the Lakers defense against the Warriors, because it was horrible, I guess. I don't know how else to explain it. Let's see. We have Ship Sinkers. Thank you so much, Ship Sinkers, and with a really cool little boat. Oh, we got Noah's Ark with the rainbow on top of it. Nice.
Thank you.
Clippers champs this year. No, I don't have the Clippers. I don't have anybody being the Nuggets. The Clippers had a terrible loss with their full team yesterday. Yesterday? What is time?
Also, I mean, they've been trending downwards since the All-Star break for some reason. Some of it is like some injuries, but some of it is just the way they're playing as well.
Yeah, they lost at home to the Hawks. Terrible, terrible, terrible loss.
And the Hawks are decimated by injuries, so
yeah,
that's tough.
I kind of want to need to take a peek at that game to figure out what happened there, because they had everybody starting. They all played their minutes. Hunter went off the bench a little bit, and that seemed like be a bit of a difference. But I don't know if the Clippers have it on paper. You know, they do, and there are moments when they can do it. It's a little hard to watch them, like their offense, you know, breaks down into a lot of ISOs. And as a coach, I like more movement. I would argue that they'd be better if they had more movement anyway. And that would make it harder on the defense. And when you get into the second round of the playoffs, you know, it's tougher. Those shots get tougher, not only because the defense is better, but the pressure is on, you know. And so you're trying to take, you know, tough middies with a guy in your face and the lane clogged. It's not easy. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to see them.
The Clippers got guys that could do that, like Kawhi Leonard, right?
I mean, yes, they can do it, so you do it. But I would still argue that they should vary it more and limit them a little bit more. They're in fourth spot right now, a game ahead of the Pelicans. So if they stay there and they play the Pelicans, it's a really great series. And I don't know who would win that. I mean, I think that would be I don't know if you can favor either of those teams right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, at the end of the day, I mean, I think they have an outside chance because their peak looked pretty good at one point. But I mean, I think we've been harping on this point for a while now, Coach Nick, that Denver
will
probably win it if they stay healthy.
And then, you know, the Clippers have to play Denver in the second round. And, you know,
who in all the NBA, who has the best chance to beat the Nuggets? You would think the Celtics. I'm not the biggest Celtics guy, but I guess you would have to say,
right? I don't know. I'm still out in the Celtics. I hate to say it. I think the crunch time stuff is probably the only thing you got to look at to say, like, can they do it? And they need to prove it. I need to see it in the playoffs. I need to see it in the first round a little bit.
Right. Like, I've been saying this all year, Coach Dick. Like, I believe in Dame and Giannis as playoff performers more than the two Jays.
And you would be silly not to, right? I mean, I think the numbers would probably bear that out to some degree. And again, we've seen the Celtics, you know, have incredible, clutch moments too in game sevens, game sixes of playoff series. So, I don't know if it's fair to say that. And they're all time historic what they're doing right now. You know, you've almost never, I don't think you've ever seen a team in the top two of both offense and defensive rating. They have what they need. I'll have to do one more video on it just to put my finger exactly on it, because I hate to talk these vague notions of like, well, is it the coach, is he doesn't have an experience or whatever, is it Tatum, and Brown's, you know, are they going to make the right decisions down the stretch all the way through an entire playoff series? They got to the finals before,
right?
So they deserve the benefit of the doubt, I think, at this point. But I don't, you know, Lopez against Jokic is interesting. You have Middleton.
You think? I mean, you think that makes it tough? I don't know. I don't think they make it tough on Jokic, right?
I mean, you know, the problem is you can't help off because then you're going to get Michael Porter Jr. threes, KCP threes. It's like
Jamal Murray rolling to the basket. Like he could play like a five if he wants. It's like crazy how they play.
Yeah. So I don't see it. I don't know. But I mean, anybody else in the league who could beat them, you know, Minnesota, I think, is still just challenged. There is some notion defensively, although they don't have cats. So that's a big problem. But although he doesn't necessarily help their defense. But, you know, you need something defensively that would cause the most problems for Denver. That's when we've seen them when they're at their weakest. But, you know, who is that team? I mean, let me look
here. The Bucks had a good win versus the Suns last night with no Giannis. But then you got this dynamic where Dame plays better without Giannis. So they're going to have to figure out how to get the best version of Dame while Giannis is playing.
Yeah.
We see some good Giannis and Dame. It just hasn't been great consistently, you know. Yeah. So
I need to say, like, my Jared Allen on Jokic footage. You don't see it except for two games a year, but you know, like, Cleveland's another elite defensive team.
Cleveland isn't built for the playoffs, I don't think.
I don't think so. And I think Garland is interesting. I went through a lot of his drives because he's another guy who's not getting a lot of fouls all of a sudden. And I mean, part of the problem is with Donovan Mitchell injured, then Garland is in a role that's not his optimal role. And so he needs, kind of like how Kyrie probably is best with, you know, alongside Luka, Garland needs Donovan Mitchell alongside to take a lot of that usage rate away from him, and then they make him better.
It's interesting that you say that, because they actually went on a run once Mobley and Garland were out, because they doubled down on Jared Allen and Donovan Mitchell on doing more work, right? Like, they kind of figured out their identity in that moment.
Right, which would probably mirror more of like what you do in a playoff series when you shorten the rotations and go with what you really have. So I don't know. They're an enigma. They need to get Donovan Mitchell back and healthy and playing at his best. And you know what? They might shock somebody. You know, Cleveland is an intriguing team to me to some degree. They're third in the East, and they're pretty much locked into that spot, it looks like. So they'd be playing, you know, probably Indiana or Miami. Gosh, that'll be an interesting first-round series too. And then we got to find out with Philly. You know, Philly, by the way, has dropped off a lot post All-Star game with the fouls, but it's really just because, you know, Embiid's not been playing. But we have Ken C. Thank you so much for the really generous super chat. And I'm sorry we got sidetracked for a second and thanks, didn't get Ken this clicker enough. But here we are. Hopefully you're out there, Ken. Thank you so much. He says, Clippers and Celtics, who have more pressure on winning it all this year? Who has more pressure on them? Is the Clippers or the Celtics? Interesting. What do you think?
Celtics.
But the Clippers, you know, they've had Paul George and Kawhi Leonard for several years now. They finally kind of got out where they're playing a lot of regular season games together. This might be the last shot they're going to have at it. But all that mixed in, you still think the Celtics have the most pressure? Like, who's putting the pressure on them? Well, I guess let's figure out where the pressure's coming from.
I guess a lot of it is like fan pressure, media, and then the organization, the front office, right? That's kind of who puts pressure on these teams, on the players. So I think, like, with the Celtics being all-time dominant when it comes to like some of their streaks and numbers and the expectations they had before the season. I mean, before the season, they didn't even have Harden, the Clippers. So yeah. I mean, that changes things once they get Harden. But I think the Clippers do have a lot of pressure, but I think there's more attention on the Celtics this year.
I think it's interesting. I can't, you know, I guess it's a media thing too, really, when you're talking about the pressure. But internally, if you're talking about teams, yeah, I mean, I would imagine maybe because Mazzulla's in his second year and they, you know, he's trying to shore up his assistants to help him out better there. Like, and they're still young, you know, in theory, you take a step back, the Clippers probably have more pressure because this is probably the last chance, right?
Also, they're all older. Yeah, I mean, they're all great, but they did add Drew Holiday and Porzingis. You know, like, I don't know. I feel like they have the best six in basketball. I feel like there's a lot of pressure there.
And then maybe the question is, what's more disappointing, the Celtics not getting to the conference finals or the Clippers? Like,
okay, put it this way, Coach Nick. If the Clippers and the Celtics both make it to the Western Conference Finals and lose, it would seem worse for the Celtics, I think, right? Yeah.
It would probably be more disappointing for the Celtics if they don't like get back to the finals.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Clippers to the finals, like, you couldn't even say that that's like Okay, put it this way. Clippers all the way to the finals would be like pretty good. Yeah. Celtics to the finals and they lose, not good.
Exactly. Great way to put it. That's why you're here.
Yep.
You win that question. Awesome. Great question. Really, really. It's whenever we can spotlight, you know, combo, I'm all for it. give him his props. Buzzer Beater's back. Thank you so much, Buzzer Beater. Again, how far can a healthy Knicks team go this year? I gotta remind myself. It's been a little while since I've seen Randall out there with what we've got. And with OG, we haven't seen too much of that. So I need to see them to really figure it out. What do you think?
Shouts to Buzzer Beater. Appreciate the super chat. Appreciate everybody who's been, you know, hitting us with super chats. I just had Jason Timpf of the Volume on my pod, and he thinks they have a championship ceiling. Does he think they're like in the bubble of like the most legit title contenders? No, but he thinks they have an outside chance. So he feels like their ceiling is a championship because of the physical brand of basketball that the Knicks play. And then you got those two guys playing at an all NBA level. OG is the perfect fit. And what Tibbs has been doing has been working. Like he's had my criticism before in the past, but what he's doing has been working. And, you know, this ties into your video. Let's say basketball gets more and more physical. I think that also plays into the Knicks' hands. So I think their ceiling, it's a championship. Will that happen? No, we've been saying like we think Denver is going to win, but I really like how they're playing, and Jalen Brunson has been amazing this
season. So. I mean, look at it this way. Let's look at the standings real quick. So the Knicks are fourth, only a half game ahead of Orlando, and two games behind Cleveland. So, you know, it feels like they're probably not going to move up. Can they move down? Yeah. Can Orlando take them? But either way, let's just pretend they're going to be stuck in that range. So they're going to be playing the Magic in the first round. Can they beat the Magic? Sure, right? Paolo is almost ready, almost, you know, to be that guy.
That team doesn't have enough shooting to be great in the playoffs yet.
You're right. That's another thing that they need to shore up. But at some point, I envision Paolo being that guy. Like, he's the guy, like the Luka, like the guy who's really going to be able to control a series.
So you think he has an MVP ceiling or what? All-NBA, All-Star? Like, what do you think?
I mean,
he's already an All-Star. Yeah.
How old is he these days? Is he still, what, 21?
Yeah, around there.
Right. That's a really important thing because, you know, between Luka, Giannis, and all those guys, they're going to win the MVP for a long time. So you got to be young to be able to break into that eventually. And he's the right age. So, yeah, I could see that trajectory for him. Maybe 50-50, whether he gets there or not. And
you rather have him or Chet for the rest of their career?
Ooh, that's a really great question.
I only ask the great questions, Coach Nick. You know that.
I mean, if you put a gun to my head instinctually, I'd have to blur out an answer.
Don't put a gun to your head, Coach.
All right, I won't put a gun to my head, but if I had to, I would proverbially. I don't know. Chet came into my mind first. If I, you know, you do that, you know, that question. First thing that answers your mind. Chet would be the thing. I'm not even sure if that's a rational thought or not, but
I agree because I've been saying that since the draft. I'd rather have Chet, so I'm gonna stick with it now.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly catches or creates the biggest advantage when he's playing that way. So, anyway, let's see here. How are we doing on time? We're good. All right. So, any other super chats? Not yet. Good. But so anyway, how far can they go? I don't know if I wait in on this then because so they can go past the first round. They can definitely win the first round. Now at that point, they got to play the number one seed, which is probably going to be Boston. Can they beat the Celtics in a 7-game series?
I think so.
Tibbs versus Mazzulla.
Well, yeah. The players matter just as much as the coach too. I mean, yeah. I kind of like the toughness of Randall and Brunson over the two Jays, even though the two Jays are probably more talented.
Well, you got to deal with like matchup stuff. So it's like, you know, OG can obviously guard either Brown or Tatum. Then who gets the other at that point for the Knicks?
I mean, Randall got the physical tools, but he just never been the greatest defender. That'd be interesting.
Right.
Oh, Josh Hart. Great Josh defender. Hart.
Yeah. 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 And even like DiVincenzo, you know, could be in there.
He's
as well.
The way I describe DiVincenzo, he's like a hustle guy who happens to be skilled as well and athletic.
Yeah. And then you got the point guard. You got, you know, Drew and going at Brunson. That's going to be a great matchup too. So it would be a really good series. I don't know.
You can look up what those Brunson – holiday matchups look like, because I think Brunson got the best of them a few times, if I'm not mistaken.
It would be worth looking at that. Maybe that would be another interesting video. I'm looking for a good video idea. So that maybe that would be the one where I just literally focus on what I'm trying to figure out. And I haven't cracked it yet. Is I want to take like a series between the teams, like a two teams for like a four games across the regular season and break it down like it was a playoff series. Mm-hmm. You know, like for instance, the Lakers and the Kings have beaten them four times. And it'll be an interesting video, but they don't really match up in the bracket where they might play each other. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to do that video, you know, whereas, okay, if we have the 3 and the 6 and they've already played and there's interesting things, maybe that's how I'll do it. But maybe it's just some individual matchups too, like, you know, because we know that that will probably happen in the second round anyway. So I don't know. Drew versus Brunson. Is that a good enough title for the video? I don't know. But
it feels like it's not like that box office of a title, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, listen, it's tough until the playoffs hit. Like, it's tough to figure out.
You just got to go. I mean, you know, Charles Barkley just, like, we're saying that he called the guys over at ESPN idiots. It really made no sense because they have to talk about the Lakers and the Warriors. And he's like, they think the Lakers and the Warriors, but that's their job. Like, that's part of the business, you know? So, you know, our last video did great when you had conspiracy and LeBron in the thumbnail.
Yeah,
you know?
Listen, just take one look at my timeline on the YouTube. You'll see that, you know, Warriors and Lakers videos do probably better than any other videos. Celtics videos don't do well. And I thought the Celtics had a really big fan base out there online and they're active. And it's like, but this is like years of data for me that like they don't tend to always do that well. So
and market teams don't do well either, right? For the most part,
I mean, you know, and that's also a crapshoot. If a coach calls out an opposing player and I can do a video on that one, that, you know, then it doesn't matter. Like, they'll do really well. So it's like, can we please have
so drama works?
Yeah. Can we get Tibbs to like call out, somebody like KP? Like, that would be awesome if he could just do that or something. And then I could do a video breakdown.
It's 2024. Just make it up, Coach Nick. Just make it up.
Well, Ken is back. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. You're so generous with the super chat. Again, Ken C. He goes, if the Celtics don't win it this year, should the Celtics break up JB and JT and keep the roster or give JT another big contract and break up the roster? Roster means White, Holiday, Porzingis.
I mean, those guys are like superstars in their role. I don't know if I would want to like give up those guys. I don't know, man.
I mean, would I take Brown and trade Tatum?
That's interesting. You know, I've always been higher on Brown than most and lower on Tatum than most, so I'm not mad at that.
Right. I'm in the same boat. And so, you know, I don't think you need to break it up. I mean, listen, this is going as well as it possibly can go this year. I mean, unless it got to be, you know, unless something happens in the playoffs, it's so indicative of a problem that I don't know. By the way, I finally figured out why those things are happening with the thumbs up.
Really? I've been.
Yeah, there's a button on the Mac that says reactions that you can control. I can make this into portrait mode, or I can make it, you know, not blurry. You know, on this thing, there's a thing for reactions, and apparently when that's and it goes on by its own. And so now, if I put the reactions on and I do that, it'll do it. So I think if I turn it off, it won't happen anymore. Anyway. So let's get back to the Celtics. I think that, that they should keep it together. I mean, again, unless it was something so bad where then maybe it's the coach you got to get rid of at that point, because they were just screwing up late game, situations and the timeouts were being mismanaged and, reviews, all that stuff. If that became the issue and they got so thoroughly outcoached by Tibbs or by, I don't know who else in the Eastern Conference that outcoaching, like Spoelstra, you know, that kind of thing. Then, yeah, you get a new coach. But I don't know if I would break up this team like this.
Maybe the Celtics should just do something different and take Mazzulla's ups and downs and just go with it. If they like, because we see like a lot of the teams that do great kind of build over a long period of time with their players and their coaches. You know, like we see it in Denver. Like we see how good the Miami Heat are. Right. I mean, the Spurs are terrible this year, but they were so good for so long just doing it the right way and keeping one coach. Why not? Like, you got a young coach. If you think he's, like, good, like, you don't have to keep switching coaches. I don't know if that's always in the best interest of the team.
Well, but at some point, it's deep in the playoffs, right? That's a big make or break thing, right? And, you know,
at the end of the day, Brown and Tatum have to be great for them to win in the playoffs. I think that's, like, so much more important than whatever Coach Mazzulla does.
Maybe. I mean, I just remember there were things like, you know, last year that were so troubling coaching-wise that you can't make those.
You mean like malpractices?
Yes, coaching criminality. Yeah. All right, we got another. Oh, hang on. We got another couple. Buzzer beater. Thank you so much again. Who is the best NBA coach to study and the worst? So that's a good question.
I like Spo coach Nurse as, you know, two of the, you know, best to study. I like that. I like Dagenault. I like.
Yeah. I'm not ecstatic with Philly right now, but certainly.
I mean, they don't have Embiid. I just like how Nurse thinks outside the box.
Okay. I do like that. I think that, yeah, I think Miami's Spoelstra is definitely the guy. You got to watch. I mean, listen, Kerr and what they do offensively is just terrific. And let's get into that because we didn't talk about the Lakers in that game against the Warriors. Where, you know, as far as that goes, if I was going to build an offense, I'd study those, you know, because also what Spoelstra does I love so much is the get actions where the guard throws it to the big and then follows his pass right back for a handoff or fake handoff. Also, what the Warriors do. And they string those actions together in a real flow way, which is important against those good defenses. So I'm sure we're missing. Yeah, Dagnall is good. Who else is should we mention out here real quick?
Oh, Mosley's been really good for the Magic, like the way he's been having them play defensively. Okay. I mean, shooting is like, I mean, you either could shoot or you can't. I mean, that's more player development and yeah. your roster. But I mean, defensively and the way that team is playing hard every game, a lot of that is personnel, but a lot of that is also coaching.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let's really quickly talk about the Lakers because I went through all those the buckets by the Warriors and it's a mess because he wants to know the worst coaches. Well,
oh, and Ty Lue. Ty Lue's pretty good too.
Ty Lue is good. Play, certainly yeah. the adjustments that he can make. That's the difference, right? That can make a difference in a playoff series. Darvin Ham is probably the most maligned coach out there. And the Lakers fans themselves, really, it's the slander is thick out there. Have you seen it on Twitter?
Is it valid? Is it? What do you think?
You know, I kind of want to do a deeper dive on it because the surface thing, I get it and I can see. And I wonder if it's more of like they're just reacting to his personality. Like he's, you know, he's not a rah-rah. He's not up there. He's just very calm. And I kind of like that presentation. But to a lot of fans, that might be triggering in a way that makes it seem like he doesn't know what he's doing. Doesn't know how to communicate what he needs them to do. His post-game comments aren't great. I will definitely say that as far as accountability and what he needs, what, you know, does he really know what the problem is, or is he just saying the typical stuff that players and coaches say? But bottom line is the defense is terrible. LeBron James is terrible on defense. It's embarrassing sometimes. And it seemed like even like with the IQ stuff, which he's usually so good at, just not in the right position, not reading properly, not moving. Just doesn't want to have to use any energy on that end. And remember I said about Luka needing to have a couple more possessions per game where he shows more energy on that end to inspire and lead. Well, it's the same thing with LeBron. And, you know, if LeBron's not going to do it, if he can't do it, the rest of that team is going to follow. And that's what's happening. And it's really bad.
Yeah. I mean, you want AI clip that. I mean, that'll do well on Instagram yes. and Twitter and YouTube shorts. So
you might wait until the end. But yes.
Well, we got to clip this. Anyway. We got to talk to the team to clip this.
Yeah. Oh, no. Anyway, they're 18th in defensive rating right now and over the whole season. I'm just like curious the last 15 games if it's any worse. Yeah, they're 28th over the last 15 games. And by the way, it's funny because with the way the fouls calls are going, their defensive rating might have gotten better than their overall. But because everyone's offensive rating has gone down, you know, you got to look at the rank. So last nine games, I hit that by accident. Let's see, the last nine games, Lakers are 28th. I bet you it hasn't changed for the last five games. So it's a real problem. You're supposed to be getting better as you're moving toward the playoffs. And they're just one of the worst teams in the league defensively. And it shows. It's really not good.
Yeah, I mean you were critical of LeBron, you know, his defense hasn't been great. So, you know, I think it's fair, but I would say offensively, I mean, he was pretty amazing that night against the Warriors.
I mean, what did he do?
He had 40 and I mean, his ability to play bully ball and then keep that savvy from the perimeter and be able to get threes off. I mean, he had one stretch where he went like bully ball three straight times. It felt like got a bucket. And then the next time he ran to the corner full speed and hit a fadeaway three. Now, they said his foot was on the line. They didn't count it. But just yeah. that the ability to play bully ball and then get to a three-point shot. Like, that guy's in such incredible shape, even though you know, from your account, he's probably taking plays off on defense. But, I mean, he's in such great shape to be able to do that.
Well, right. And so you're supposed to say, okay, great, he can hammer people on the offensive end so that it's a net positive overall because, you know, even if he's giving up, you know, 20 points, he's scoring 40 and whatever. When you look at the general inactivity, I mean, I took notes. I'll read you all the notes because it doesn't, I don't want to just focus only on LeBron, but like AD got taken a couple times by Kuminga.
Well, AD got hurt too.
Yeah. And now he's got an eye injury, which I have to see that injury, see how bad it was. Doesn't sound great, Bob. But then, Rui is not a good defender. Slow feet, doesn't have active hands. He just seems generally lost. D'Lo is not active at all. He'll point out stuff that maybe he should be there, or he'll realize way too late that he needs to jump down and stuff. But overall, just a distinct lack of energy on the defensive end. And that would probably go towards the coaching. They need to figure out a way to get them to play better because they don't. This is not a LeBron team that's like fourth in the conference. They're going to coast in and then they'll go all the way to the finals. This is a team that if they lose, I mean, I guess we can't. They already know. Maybe that's the point. Is they already know that they're going to be 10th. Right, they're not moving up and not moving down, so maybe that's what they're gonna do. They're thinking they're just gonna cruise, and then that you know, nothing's gonna matter at this point, and try and turn it on when they play that one game in the play-in. Good luck with that against the Warriors. Is all I'm gonna tell you because the Warriors are gonna kill you doing that, and they're gonna give up their own amount of points. But it seems like the Warriors that would have an advantage against the Lakers if it's a score off, you know, it's a barn burner. Does that feel right to you?
Tell me more.
You know, if we're going to talk about a 135 to 130 game, I just feel like the Warriors have the advantage on that end. And that's probably what it's going
to
be.
It's kind of like to the point where I was saying earlier, like those lower scoring grinded-out games probably benefit the Knicks, and you're saying the opposite benefits the Warriors.
Exactly.
But, I mean, the playoffs –
Lakers.
The playoffs – well, I guess if it's like Warriors versus Kings, you will see that. But the playoffs will be like lower scoring games in general, you know?
Usually we'll see that, especially because the beginning of the season you saw 180 to where 160 to 150 games, like something was going on there. I guess it was, you know, if it's all just single-mindedly the refereeing, you know, that'll change anyway, right? Because they're going to call it differently against in the playoffs. All right, we got buzzer beater again. My goodness, thank you so much, buzzer beater. Is Brunson the new archetype for point guards? By the way, Brunson's kicked up his 3-point attempts. I just checked it the other day.
Do you got like a cameraman behind
you? I don't know why. Again, I must have hit the button for, you know, center stage. I thought center stage doesn't do that, but maybe it's the other way. Am I locked in now?
No, it's good. It's like following you. It looks cinematic.
Yeah, right. All right. I'll put it back on. There you go. And I'll put portrait back on. And watch this. Hey, ooh. Studio light.
That's actually pretty cool for like a monologue, I think.
Okay.
Like just have like the darkness in the back. Shouts to buzzer beater though. Is Brunson the new archetype for PGs? Possibly, because you know the CP3 style of PG is kind of like not there anymore, right? The set the table. I mean, yeah, it makes sense. You need like five threats to score, and like you need your PG to be able to score, and Brunson is scoring on an elite level. So yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, I mean, he's not throwing crazy passes for dimes, whatever. He makes the right pass, and the kid you're getting him, you know, the six assists a game. And like all of his threes, I think, are pretty much wide open. He's kind of that Jokic way where Jokic just, you know, has plenty of opportunities where he could shoot more threes, but he really only takes them when they're wide open, right? And primarily because he's so good at everything else, that he doesn't need to settle for a three unless he's just, you know, really open in rhythm. And I feel like a lot of that is the same with Brunson. They're so afraid of the shiftiness getting downhill that they will he'll get open and he'll have plenty of opportunities. But he's taken, you know, almost seven a game, which is a great number for him. I thought, you know, he used to be lower. He's been in the fours. So, I mean, that the way he plays is the way I'd have any point guard play. It really is. It's a fantastic way. And he's tough. Nothing really bothers him. He'll complain about some calls to some degree, but it doesn't go crazy off of it. He'll make his point on the way down. He won't like walk down the court and not play defense. So just a tough kid overall. You know, Rick did a fantastic job to develop this kid from the crib, and it's paying off. And all those guys from Villanova. Now, yeah. Buzzer beater, are you going to do an NCAA bracket prediction show? Wow. I don't know. Are you up on what's going on with the NCAAs? Oh, you know what? I can't because the games start on Thursday, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to do it, I would start studying.
I mean, my problem is I'm out of town on Wednesday for the rest of the month, so I'm out. By the way, if you're wondering, we won't do a show on Monday. I'm going to be out on vacation.
So we got to find another date.
Yeah, so we got to figure that out. So if you're out there wondering what's going on, I won't produce a video starting on Wednesday for the next 10 days after that. I'm out of town. I can't do any work. Sorry. And I know, you know what's going to happen. There's going to be at least two games that are going to be so amazing and so ridiculous that they need a breakdown. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm already trying to let it go now.
It's good to get off the grid for a little bit.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, you know, you don't want to, you have a family. I have a family. I got family needs comes first. All right. Alan Tran. Thank you, Alan. Great to see you. Bill Russell was an active player coach. Would the Lakers be better off if LeBron pulls this? No, I don't think it has happened since the 60s. I think that's right as well. I know Wilt tried to do it in the ABA, but
Tree Rollins for the Orlando Magic.
By the way, Wilt went to the Clippers at some point, and I kind of feel like he was a player coach, but maybe he didn't play. He ended up being injured the whole time, and that was a little bit later in the 60s. But wait, what did you just say?
Tree Rollins of the Orlando Magic was a player coach. Fun fact.
What? When?
Look it up.
Tree Rollins?
Tree Rollins.
All right, I'll have to look that up.
So everybody in the comment section, look that up. But I would say, like, I don't know if I have to whisper to this, but like, LeBron is a player coach.
Like, I mean, right. He's already tried to do it. And I don't like it. I don't think you can do it. I think it's too many variables you got to deal with when you're a player. You cannot get enough of a perspective to see what you need as a coach as well. It's too hard.
The coach, the GM, you see the comments on Instagram and social media. It's all true.
You see him leaning over the coach and like whispering and like signaling and trying to like undermine the coach, right?
That's is he behind Darvin Ham going like,
yeah, no, like that. We saw that with Vogel. I can't remember if I seen it with Ham.
He actually did that.
For my players, I love the players to be able to jump in there and weigh in and stuff like that and tell us what's going on. But you need the manager who's got a little perspective and distance to see things and also numbers, you know, and crunching and all that different things they need to do to figure out lineups. You can't juggle all of that. It's too much, especially the way he plays. If it was like, you know, if it was a role player kind of guy who's playing 22 minutes, like maybe that's the kind of player that could do it. But not, I don't see how LeBron's role could be doing that well. But I like what you said in terms of maybe he's already kind of doing that anyway. And by the way, if that really is the case, it's not so great. Like it, you know, there it's mediocre.
And thank you, Alan, for the super chat. We appreciate you.
And when Joe Starr is back, thank you so much, Joe Starr. Really appreciate it. Thoughts on Timberwolves deep playoff run and Ant? Well, Ant, we like a lot. Good positive thoughts on Ant. Really. I thought he would be the one who was also penalized a lot for not getting more fouls after the All-Star break when they changed the way they're doing it. Not too much, a little bit, but within, you know, the normal margins. But just overwhelming talent, you know.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Are they going to have a deep playoff run?
Oh, man, the cat injuries kind of sucks. But Naz Reid is like emerged. I always thought he was one of the most underrated players in the NBA. Did you see Ant Edwards hit his head on the rim? That was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable what he can do. And the sky's the limit for him. MVPs, whatever you want to say. So, for sure. I mean, listen, you don't take a starter and an all-star starter out of your lineup and you know, think that, oh, you're going to still, you know, be good. I there are moments, though, where Naz Reid maybe fits a little bit better. I'm kind of want to look at their record without him. So, he's been out for 1, 2, 3, 4, for 5 games. They've won 3 of those. Indiana, Clippers, and Utah, and they lost to the Lakers and Cleveland. So, you know, I don't know. I'm more worried about Minnesota and the way they're coached anyway. I feel like that's a problem that could cause issues, that, you know, when you're talking about adjustments and clashes deep in the playoffs. So I don't think they're going to have a deep playoff run. Right now, they are locked into third. They're only a half game behind Denver, but I don't know. I feel like Denver, what they end up doing is like they'll probably see the question is, does Denver even care if they're second or third? They might end up resting their players down that stretch and lose some games. So you could almost assume that Minnesota could get in front of Denver. The Clippers are not going to catch them. So let's just say they're second. They got to play seventh seed, which could be, I mean, we're never going to know, but then they're going to play after that 3-6. So they'd play, you know, that could be Denver. So they might have to play Denver in the second round. Now, I don't think there's no way they're going to beat them.
Wow, no way. No way.
Right.
That's interesting. No way is deep.
Right. So then you got to start looking at, like, what does Denver want to position themselves?
No way is so absolute, Coach Nick. No way.
no way that the Timberwolves beat the Nuggets.
I think it's very unlikely. No way is. Maybe I'm paying too close attention to your words, Coach Nick.
Maybe, you know, that's always not a good idea.
With you, I thought it'd be a good idea. You've been educating the basketball community for years. I can't
do my words, but nonetheless, let's just pretend this. Let's say the Nuggets are worried about a particular opponent, and they want to avoid them, so they're going to maybe move down a little bit. I don't know who that would be. I guess we can start looking at head-to-head records to figure out who they've struggled with this year, but. Yeah, I don't know. On paper, I don't know if I see them, moving too much. But I do think that they'll probably end up resting their players the last 5-6 games, and then that could cost them a seed.
Okay.
All right. Well, listen, awesome show. We kind of went long in the tooth, but we have a lot of people here watching, so it's really exciting to get all really great questions, awesome super chats from everybody. Kip, buzzer beater, so generous. Joe Starr, Alan Tran, Ken C. Thank you so much. I guess it was and then we don't forget Chip Sinkers. Although everybody out there, thank you so much for being so generous.
And we're going to continue to try and get better at this live show. We've been doing it a long time. If anybody out there has any suggestions on how we can get better, let us know. We're going to keep it going. We've been working on some new thumbnails courtesy of Coach Nick. So
let us know, what do you guys think of the thumbnail?
Coach Nick, let me I don't, this probably could be talked about after the show, but I didn't see the thumbnail when it was saying like waiting for the live show, because I wanted to clip it, and it didn't show the thumbnail before. The thumbnail only shows after when it's posted. How does that work?
Yes, that'll definitely show then. But what was it showing when you were?
It was just kind of like this, like kind of black and orange screen with like a little bit of orange, and it's like it's about to go live. It definitely wasn't our thumbnail when I checked it out.
Yeah, I don't know then. For that minute. So maybe it's very quickly doesn't show, but then it pops up. But it'll be there. It'll be there when it lives live on the in the timeline.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's. I think we'll wrap it up. But a great show. Thank you so much for everybody being out there. Thank you again for everybody for the super chats. And don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel. We're a conversation. You in? Are you in, Combo?
Yes, sir.